sorry.
Okay,
we have to let the technology catch up with me here. I'm anxious because we have such a long agenda. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Terre Haute City Council. This Thursday, May 9th, 2019, we start our meetings with a moment of silence and the Pledge of Allegiance, which will be led tonight by Councilman Neil Garrison.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Michelle, call the roll, please.
Councilperson Aller.
Present.
Councilperson Azar.
Present.
Councilperson Crossan.
Present.
Councilperson DeBon.
Here.
Councilperson Elliott.
Here.
Councilperson Garrison.
Here.
Councilperson Morris.
Here.
Councilperson Nassar.
Present.
Councilperson Nation.
Here.
All are present.
Thank you. It is our on our agenda that we have 30 minutes of time for public comment on non-agenda items. If you are here to comment on something and you're not sure whether or not it's an agenda item, there are agendas on the front, right up here on this front pew, which you are welcome to come and get one of. So we do ask that you come to the microphone, state your name, your address, and then keep your comments to 3 minutes so that others can also comment. I might say tonight, in particular, we have a long agenda, and some of you are here for things that are pretty far down on the agenda. So please be cognizant of that as you're making your comments of the other people in the audience. And I do want to say before we start that, I just want to welcome, I know we have a scout troop here tonight, and we're always glad to have youngsters in our midst. One, they cheer us up, and secondly, they show us that there are young people out there that are interested in their community, and so we welcome you tonight. Thank you. So we'll begin public comment now.
My name is Donald Hyde. I live at 1411 Poplar Street, and for once I'm going to talk 3 minutes or less. I'll make it quick and short. I was most disappointed with the election we just had. According to the newspaper, we didn't even reach 13% of the registered voters. And I personally know for a fact that if you count everybody 18 or over that lives in this county, the registered voters does not come close. Therefore, once again, nobody has reached a minority of people, a majority of people where they can claim they got a mandate for anything. And the reason I say that is sad is because this city in this county, in the next few years, are going to spend a great deal of money. A great deal of money. It's going to take 20 to 25 years to pay off the debt we're going to run up. All that's going to come back on us in things that we'd like to be able to do and not do. And we're gambling that the casino will help bail us out a little bit. The problem is, and this is your problem, and I'm talking to the mayor and all the state council members, county council members, and county commissioners, that the state put in a little clause that you can't have that casino until the people of the county vote for its approval. And right now, you guys have not campaigned pro or con, done anything to get the people behind having the casino here, so I'm not sure where it stands. I'm not made up my mind for or against it, but I don't think anybody else has either. There's questions people have, and I don't see any answers coming. As far as the money's already been spent, you're already going to have that thing you're building for getting people thing. But the problem is both the casino and that one thing you're building requires tourism. And I have been to a year and a half worth of these city council meetings. I have even made suggestions and looked at like I was crazy for saying it. Yet, you have made no effort to communicate to the public at large, to the other branches of the government, how you're going to build things that would bring tourists here. Now, you've got the Riverfront Project, and the Riverfront Project can't agree amongst themselves what they're doing. I'm sorry, but there's a lot of work to be done, and you're running out of time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Clark Cowden. I live at 5 Todd Place in Terre Haute. Last summer, you as a council approved a change in one of our city bus routes, eliminating a route that used to go up to Sony on North Fruit Ridge and replacing it with a route to West Terre Haute. I was very grateful for that and feel like that's an important service to connect our two communities across the river. I would like to continue to try to find ways to help more people in West Terre Haute become aware of this and have more people ride the bus. And so one suggestion I would like to have you consider is that when I went on the website this afternoon that shows all the bus routes for the city, it does not show that there is a bus route to West Terre Haute. It continues to show the route to the Sony facility, which is no longer functioning. And so if people go on the website, they still have no idea that that route is in place. So if we could get the website updated, it would be helpful here after this amount of time so that people, when they go on online, can see that that route is available and maybe more people could take advantage of it.
Thank you. Good idea. Anyone else who'd like to make a public comment on a non-agenda item?
Good evening. My name is Noah Gamble. I'm an attorney with Wagner Crawford Gamble and Jungers. I'm here as a follow-up with regard to, I came here in February with regard to an ordinance that was passed by this body in September 2017. I represent the pensioners in the 1925 pension fund. There was an ordinance passed, General Ordinance Number 7, in 2017, that by January 1st there would be a segregated bank account created for those pension monies to be paid out of. We had some questions, and Mr. Felling and I have been in conversations with regard to that to make sure that that was created. And if you remember, this was to abide by federal law and state law to make sure that those funds were segregated from the general fund and used only for the purpose for making sure that those 1925 pensioners were able to get their pension money. Again, just to remind the city council that the way that it works is that the city funds the money and then is reimbursed by the state for those monies paid. And again, what our intention was is that that money to be fronted by the city be segregated so that those 1925 pensioners were guaranteed as a security that those that their pensions were safe. To my understanding, no monies have been segregated at this time. It is my hope that the city council will take notice of this and make sure that those monies meant for those 1925 pensioners, as they are reimbursed every 6 months, to make sure those monies are segregated from the general fund. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You want to respond there?
Madam President, members of the council, Mayor Duke Bennett, we get paid twice a year. We've not received any revenue to put into that bank account yet for this year. Since that ordinance went into effect at the beginning of the year, the bank account has been created. We're waiting on a disbursement to be able to put into that fund. So we'll continue to front the money, pay the bills, and when that money comes in, it will flow through that account for perfect accountability. Any questions with that, I'd be happy to answer.
So has the account been created? We're just waiting
yes.
for disbursement, so it
yes.
has been created?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Have we heard when we're getting our disbursement?
Leslie, are you here? What's the 2 months we get those? I don't want to say.
July 1st and October.
Okay, so July and October we get our disbursement. We'll get a big check then, and the second check will come following. And we're getting reimbursed for last year. It's a year behind. Mm-hmm. It's always that way. It's the way the system works. It's always been that way. What we've changed now is a separate bank account to run it through. And as soon as we get our first disbursement, it will go into that bank account.
So there is actually a separate bank account?
Yes.
Okay. No, did you? I'm sorry.
Mayor, I know you. Is it a separate account for State Board of Accounts purposes? Is that account been created, or just
no,
a bank account?
No, that's why this ordinance. We did it because of the ordinance. We created it.
Okay. Thank you. No, I'm talking. Is there a separate fund that's being created?
No, the fund has always existed.
Okay. All right. So a separate bank account's been created.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
No, did you have a follow-up?
And I understand that that it's a reimbursement for what has already been paid. Our hope, again, was that is that those monies would stay there, that reimbursement to the city. It remains there, and then it's paid down to those police pensioners. That was the intent of the city ordinance, was that that money stays segregated, that reimbursement to the city. So it's city gets the money back, but let's make sure that money gets into be paid again back to the police pensioners. It stays in a segregated account.
So that it's always in a segregated account.
So that it's always there and that in that account, and it gets paid down. That's the way the ordinance was written in such a way. And so I would argue that whatever monies that still existed as of January 1st from that October disbursement should have been moved over into that account. But regardless, that money plus the reimbursement from the upcoming disbursement should be in that account and stay in that till the next disbursement.
So at the end of the year, when we've expended 100% of those funds, we get 97% back. Just so you know, that's what we get back from the state. We get reimbursed at 97% of the 100% we expend for the pensioners. Mm-hmm. So there really isn't any money left over. We have to front the money. We have to put money in there to allow there to be extra money. Every penny that comes in revenue goes directly to the pensioners, plus property tax dollars that we have to add to it mm-hmm. to make up the 3%, 4%. It varies a little bit from year to year.
Well, I think we're all just kind of trying to understand this completely, but do the funds, when they come, will they in July, when those come in, be placed in this segregated account
yes.
and stay there until another payment has to be made?
They won't stay very long because we need to be reimbursed. We've already fronted the money. We've already made the payments for a year. That's our money to be reimbursed for. That's how it works. It works that way for every municipality. There's nothing unique about Terre Haute. That's the way the state reimburses municipalities for pensions. We didn't create that. The state did.
I guess my question would be, why not leave it there so that at the next payment, the state wouldn't have to, I mean, the city wouldn't have to front as much money?
Well, then the general fund will give up $4 million. We'll have to find it somewhere. I mean, if they were current, you could probably have some money in there, but we're getting reimbursed for last year, for 2018.
Okay. Anyone else?
Thank you.
Did you want to make another comment?
And again, that's the point that we did with regard to the city ordinance and why we drafted in such a way, is that actually the ordinance states that that the account shall never have a negative balance. However, as a result, qualified pension fund distributions may be required to be paid from other accounts and debited to the segregated 1925 pension fund until such time as state pension reimbursements are received. Again, this was the whole point of doing this city ordinance in 2017, was to create the account and to make sure that that those funds weren't commingled with the general fund. That's why this account wasn't created in October of 2017, which could have been any time a bank account could have been created. That's why there was such a leeway. And actually, during negotiations with the city, there was originally that the account wouldn't be created until 2021. That was changed to 2019. That was through negotiations. And the whole point was not that there would be this bank account created, but that those funds would be segregated from the general fund to that account.
Mr. Gamble, have any of your clients been late on any of their pension checks?
No, and to be fair, they have not.
Okay.
They have not been late on their. The city has been good about making sure those payments. Again, this was a safeguard to make sure that, pursuant to federal law and the statute, that those pension funds aren't commingled, and there was a guarantee that those are segregated from the general fund.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Comments? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ram.
Thank you, City Council.
Any other public comments?
Yeah, my name's Kevin Southwood. We're always talking about like beautifying Terre Haute. I'd like to maybe propose an idea about people that have well-kept yards or something like that to you know, maybe every 2-3 years or something like that, give them like a small plaque or trophy, you know, like a outstanding Terre Haute resident or something like that. And, you know, you're putting up cameras all over the place to catch people dumping trash. So on the other side of that is the people that won't clean up their properties, you give them like a Terre Haute Pig Award. and you put their address and their home right on the internet, and they can't take it off until they clean up their their hole that they live in, you know, because the only way you're gonna make people do anything, you have to shame them, you know. There's no, you know, I mean, you try and clean up Terre Haute for years and decades, and it ain't worked, and you know, so. You know, I think the only way you can do it, you know, you either have to offer, you know, a resident, you know, like if somebody has a well-kept property, they can only win one in 5 years. But somebody that won't clean up their property and they have like a pigsty, they can win it every time, you know, every 2 years, you know, and, you know, be like a, you know, Terre Haute Pig Award.
Thank you.
I do, too.
Any other comments from the public? If not, we'll move ahead. Michelle, next agenda item, correcting journal.
There are no corrections to the journal.
Communications from the mayor.
Madam President, members of the council, Mayor Duke Bennett, I dropped off a little packet for you that says CTAR comments, 2018 CTAR comments. I just wanted to go through this briefly with you. I do this every year. As we wrap up last year, and then I've got some financial updates I'd like to provide for you, too. So the first bullet there is we had 88 total funds, which that was up from the previous year, and then attachment A, which you don't really need to go to right now, but it's just a copy of that cash report with all of those 88 funds on it. 82 of those 88 funds had a positive cash balance at the end of the year. That's an improvement from the past. We had six funds, obviously, that finished with a negative balance. Three of those six that finished with a negative balance were federal reimbursement grants. So they're always negative or zero. They're never positive because those are reimbursement grants. And one was an internal reimbursement grant for our health-related healthcare group health fund. We had some significant issues last year from a health perspective and some high claimants, but we will get some reimbursement this year that obviously doesn't show up in the December report that will come in. Things that are over $150,000 that we paid, we get reimbursed for. So things will kind of balance themselves back out a little bit on that one. And the remaining two funds were the golf course operating funds. So we're getting to the point now where we can put a lot more focus on those two particular funds. So those are the only two real funds that have a negative balance that need to be addressed. Total cash balance for all funds since 2015, that was our toughest year, was 2015, 4 years ago, but we've improved the overall cash balance by $13.5 million. So compare the end of 2015, we had $25,735,000 in the bank through all funds, and at the end of 18, we had $39,256,000. So that's an increase of cash of $13.5 million. The general fund is the next bullet. As you can see, we were just talking about the cash balance of the general fund only, a negative $8.9 million in 2015, a negative $8.1 million in 16, positive $1.2 million in 17, and a positive $405,000 at the end of 18. So our structural deficit, which I will have you turn back and go to Exhibit B and C, it's a graphs. I apologize. I put the staple right over the top of the page. So the current graph that says general fund cash is the one I'm looking at. Everybody find that one? Mm-hmm. So you can see what our negative balance was. Looking back at 15, 16, 17, and 18, the specific numbers are at the top. So you can see how we've improved over that time. And remember, we've had a redevelopment fund loan in here to help us with that. So if you go to the next one, it shows you without the loan. So this is what we've done over the last 4 years without the loan in there. So we went from a negative 8.9 to a negative 8.1, roughly, a negative 3.7, and we finished last year with a negative 1.5. So that's our structural deficit. So at the end of this year, we will flip that and we'll be positive for 19. So we won't have any more structural deficit with any fund at all. We have a positive cash balance just because of our loan that we've minimized from $5 million to $2 million. We'll be reducing that to $1 million. I'll talk about that in a minute. But that shows you the structural cash deficit. So we came into this year with a negative 1.5 without the loan, and at the end of this year, then that will be gone, completely gone. So I wanted to point that one out. Going back to the second page of financial highlights. So I wanted to reemphasize this is the fourth straight year of having an overall balanced budget for the city of Terre Haute, 16, 17, 18, and 19. And the budget we're putting together for next year that we've started on will be balanced also. The second bullet is the Vigo County bond anticipation note. We paid $1.5 million on principal last year and $247,000 in interest. We have regular interest payments, and then when we make a principal payment, they charge you interest too. But that's fine because it reduces the interest in the long haul. And so our current balance is $4.5 million of the $6 million that we borrowed. And remember, none of these funds went to the general fund. It was all sanitary district and wastewater reimbursement on the $6 million. This year, we're going to pay another $1.5 million minimum. We may pay more than that because we have a very healthy cash balance over there, which will reduce our balance at the end of this year to $3 million. So we will cut it in half and owe the county $3 million. And once again, remember, they bought this bond. So it's an investment for the county. They're getting a better interest rate than they were getting through the bank, and it saved us interest when they did that also. So it's kind of a win-win for the city and the county on that particular bond anticipation note. And it's due in 2021, the remaining amount. We'll have most of that paid off much sooner than that. The redevelopment loan, as you know, we had started out last year with a $5 million loan. We paid $3 million of that down in July, carried over $2 million then into this year. We'll be paying $1 million on that in July of this year and pay the rest of it off at the end of the year. I still think we need to consider that as when we look at tax anticipation warrant, kind of a balance so we can reduce the tax anticipation warrant again and maybe still use $1 million of redevelopment money. They've got plenty of cash on hand to support that. So we'll see how that plays out, and we'll decide that at the end of the year. On our tax anticipation warrant for this year, 2 years ago we had $5 million, and we went down to $4 million. And then this year we did $3.5 million, and then we're going to be paying $500,000, $500,000 back on the principal in July of this year to reduce the interest even more. So hopefully we'll be in that range for next year. We may be able to reduce the TAW. I'm not sure how far we can go down with it yet until we build up additional cash reserves, but we continue to reduce that. So if you look at the next bullet, in 2017, we had a total of $9 million of internal loans and TAW. We reduced that to $6 million in 2018 and $4 million by the end of this year. So we will have gone from $9 million to $4 million in 2 years in borrowing. Any questions on the borrowing part, any of those pieces? I'm just going to keep moving here.
Yeah, real quick, with regards to the TAW loan and you saying that we have plenty of cash balances with the redevelopment, does that include the convention center money that they just took?
Yes, okay. Yes. Right. And just so you know, I mean, all that's kind of built into their planning process, the convention center, the police station, and loan opportunities, and still leaving money in there to be able to react to something that may happen.
Thank you.
At the end of last year, we paid all of our bills. Every single bill was paid, just so you'll know, as we closed out Fundware at the end of the year. So it probably hurt our general fund cash balance a little bit, brought it down to $400,000 because of that, but every bill that we had that we'd received, we put in a system and we paid it. And I feel really good about that. Typically, we carry some of them over to January because they're not due for 30 days, a lot of them. Some are 15, some are 10, you know how that works. But we paid everything that we had that we put in the system. So just that's more of an FYI than anything else. All data has been converted to the new system beginning of 2005 through 2018. Everything has been put into Fundware. And we pretty much closed that out. Now we're using Financial Edge beginning this year. So we completed that task. It was very cumbersome to get all that old data, make sure everything matched up to the penny for all those years. But that's all been completed. So I just wanted to give you that information. We collected our first pilot payment last week. SRF released that to us through the process that we go through with them. And so we've received our first payment. The second payment, I'm not sure, probably be October, November time frame, I would suspect. We're going to ask for it sooner just because we believe they're on a six-month delay on that right now based on our original agreement. So we are working with them to do that, and we were fine from a cash perspective. I just wanted to – we need to get back on that six-month schedule that we agreed to with them a couple of years ago. So one negative thing here just – troubles me a little bit, and then it's not really horrible, it's just the tax cap credits. If you flip to the last, let's see, it's Exhibit E. I put together a spreadsheet of our tax cap credits since 2009 when they came into existence. As you know, we've talked about assessed values have gone up some, but our tax cap credits have gone up. So if you look look at the rest of that other data later, but if you look at 2019, we just received these numbers last week from the DLGF. Our property tax cap credits for our civil city, which means our general funds that get property tax dollars, is going to lose $12.8 million this year. We're not going to be able to collect $12.8 million that's been approved by the state for us to collect, but because of the tax caps, we're unable to get that. Compare that to last year, it was $11.7 million. So roughly we're losing another $1 million. So what that means is the assessed values have gone up, and so some people's bills have gone up, but many people have hit their tax caps, whether it's residential or commercial. I don't have a breakdown for that yet because we just got this information last week. But it's worse than what we would have anticipated significantly. So, and then the second piece of that is the Terre Haute Sanitary District. Last year we lost $1.1 million. This year we're losing $2.6 million, so that's about a $1.5 million swing. We'll just have to see what our actual receipts are. We're not really going to know a whole lot until we get our receipts in about a month when we get our first disbursement. But down at the bottom, you can see what the totals are then from the beginning of the tax caps in 2009. Civil City, the general fund, if you will, has lost $102 million. Sanitary District has lost $19 million. For a total of $121 million, basically $122 million, that's not been paid to the city of Terre Haute because of property tax caps that have been approved, the budgets have been approved, the state approved it, but this is when the tax caps kick in. We always find that out in March or April of the year you're going to receive your revenue. And so this is more just of an FYI. Some people say, why are we still talking about the tax caps? Because they continue to impact us every single year. So, in essence, we're not going to collect $1 million of some increased value this year. Not sure what that is. We budgeted very conservatively, so it's not going to hurt us, except $1 million that we probably would have collected otherwise will not be there to go into that, building that cushion and that reserve. So that's more just for your general knowledge of how significant these property tax caps have been, not only on the city of Terre Haute, but many other communities. So I'd be happy to answer any questions on any of this or anything else related. Yes.
Mayor, the comment, the bullet point about all accounts payable claims entered in December were paid in full prior to 12/31/18.
Right, our last check run.
Now, what that tells me is that December 18 disbursements were inflated higher than normal as a result of that, which means January 2019 would probably be lower.
Maybe. I mean, it all depends. If they're just normal bills, that could be the case. But if we had some big bills in there, it might offset that. I mean, if we look at the numbers of actually what we expended, I don't know if that's the case or not. We'll see.
Okay. And then the last bullet point on the last page, the public safety FLOIT.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mention that one. Yes.
Well, no. I mean, do you recall what we did? We budget anything out of that?
We budgeted 1.6.
For?
Public safety. We created a third budget. Remember, we have police and fire, and the only thing we left in those two were salaries and benefits. We created a public safety budget to handle all the other miscellaneous expenses for the department. So we budgeted $1.6 million to fund that budget for 2019.
For items that had previously, in prior years, had been in a different budget.
In the general fund, fire, general fund, police.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. So we got a cushion there build in of $400,000 to go to reserves.
Well, I hope so.
Well, it's coming in at that rate, so I apologize for not mentioning that one, but it, you know, we had two different estimates. The county had an estimate from their people, which was lower. You know, Baker Tilly was Umball. They gave us an estimate of close to $2 million. This is the DLGF number.
Well, but what I think is important is we use that to, you know, to get our short-term borrowing paid down.
Right. That's why we left that $400,000 on the table of not spending it, not budgeting it, so we wouldn't even consider spending it.
Okay.
That goes directly to the bottom line.
Yeah. Thank you.
Councilman Nasser?
Yeah. With Fundwear and Financial Edge, I'm sure that makes the controller's job a little bit easier, being able to take care of payables and financial data, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing you got to think about is you have to learn a whole new system.
Okay.
You know, and we've lost some staff.
Right.
And so we're still going through that learning curve of a lot of pieces of this that we, when we do something especially new or different that we hadn't done in this new system. But yes.
Well, I just want curious how the financial reports will be distributed. I know we're a little behind. I just didn't know if converting over will get us back on track.
It will, yes, as soon as we possibly can. I mean, if we could be on track, we'd already be there, as you know.
Okay.
They're working on January right now to complete that. They've started on February, bank reconciliations. You know, the person that used to do all of that left us in December. And so, you know, we're still cleaning up some ADP things from last year, but we're starting to get on a roll with that now. So we'll be able to crank them out much quicker once we get the first one out,
okay,
which we anticipate very soon.
All right. Thank you. Are you?
I still want to put a date on it because you hold me to it.
I know. Okay? I will. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Soon.
Any thoughts on updates of the long-term financial plan?
I talked to Paige about 2 weeks ago about that with Baker Tilly, who does that. She was waiting on property tax cap numbers. That's a
so
big one for us.
That's all I want to know.
And she's gone on vacation for a week and a half. I tried to call her this week to get an update on some things. All she needs to do is plug in a few things. Final numbers for last year, tax cap credits, and then we can update that. So I'll ask her to do it as soon as she's got all her pieces of information.
Okay. Thank you.
I've got one more question.
Okay. Councilman Nasser.
I know you had talked about possibly leaving that $400,000 cushion for public safety. Has there been any discussion possibly doing more with code enforcement with that extra revenue?
Not this year's budget. I mean, okay. We'll propose that for next year. We really need to put a little cash back.
Okay.
But we can build that for the future because this is going to be a pretty regular revenue stream that we've never had before.
Okay. I know.
Any other questions, Council, Mayor? Okay,
thank you
very much. Reports of city officials. We're going to start with a guest tonight. This is just a time in the agenda that we plug this sort of thing in. I'd like to welcome Richard Pant from the United Way, who's going to give us a short presentation about the United Way and their current planning efforts for our community.
Members of the council, thank you so much, and thank you, Martha, for the invite here. I assure everyone in the room we are not here to raise funds. And the reason I say that is what most people think United Way is, but we are trying very hard in the last year or two to begin building partnerships, and those partnerships must include government and they must include business. So I'd like to take the 10 or so minutes that I have here, and I will go quickly to show you a little bit about the work and what is actually a different United Way than what most people are aware of. But it's so important for our city officials, our county officials, our government, and our business leaders to understand what a partnership like this can mean. Our United Way 3 years ago really began re-looking at what should a United Way be for a community like the Wabash Valley, Terre Haute, and Vigo County. We announced 1 year ago what is a remarkably different direction for what most people know about United Way. That direction did not come from our board of directors and volunteers sitting in a room. It came from us going out into the community over the course of a year and a half and doing about 40 conversations with school groups, church groups, neighborhood associations, children, adults, education coalitions. You name the group, we sat down and asked, what do we aspire to? What are the concerns? What should United Way be working on? And consequently, I've distributed to the council here a strategic plan that was issued to the public, and you can find on our website, that really describes a new direction. And for us, it's a collective impact direction, which I will describe for you in just one moment. But our United Way wants to be singularly known within the community as addressing the cycle of generational poverty that we face in the Wabash Valley. And that is different than we are normally known. When I started 3 years ago as the director for the United Way, I would go out to the public and poll them and ask them, what does United Way do? The most common answer I would receive is they fundraise. That is a terrible mission for a charitable organization to be known for. We need to be known for the work that we do. Consequently, I would like to talk to you about this, but there's not near enough time. I would like to give a three-hour presentation if you all have time for that, but I will not. Our strategic plan is on our website at uwwv.org about us. But this is the cover to a report that I would love for our city council, our county government officials, all of us to be aware of that is available throughout the state of Indiana. It is called the Alice Report. This was a study commissioned by Rutgers University and United Way worldwide, and it is available in about 20 of the states in the country. Indiana is fortunate enough to have one. The Alice Report, just as it says, is a study of financial hardship. The reason United Way wants to talk about this in every forum that we can is because, unfortunately, when we start talking about the fight against poverty, I still run into the mindset within our community and other areas that poverty is about lazy people who want to live off the government. And unfortunately, that stifles a great conversation about how we can address it. That's why United Way nationally started creating the ALICE report. ALICE is simply an acronym for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, and Employed. It is trying to quantify those who are working very hard in our community and still not having enough to get by. If I share with you what that looks like, we always hear about poverty rate. And in Indiana, there are 14% of the households within Indiana living below the federal poverty rate. The Alice Report quantifies another 25% of our population in the state of Indiana that lives below what we call the Alice threshold. And that means only 61% of the households in our state live in what we would consider a financially stable place, where we're not worried about if we need new tires on the car, can we pay our utility bill or the medical bill that comes in. Let me describe for you very quickly how you do that, because it is very important information for, I think, our business leaders, our nonprofits, and our government to understand. A minimum ALICE budget takes publicly available data and calculates what is the bare minimum for housing, childcare, food. Things like you don't get to eat out, you have a meticulous budget for your household and a grocery list to try to live by. And it does even consider what are the tax implications. In Indiana, within this report, you can find pages of information for Vigo County, including information for Terre Haute on this particular report. This is the Vigo County bare minimum ALICE budget broken down by those categories. And the reason I share it within the public realm and with charities and with government officials is because you will see the bare minimum housing, this is for a family of four, two working adults, an infant, and a toddler that need child care within our community. Bare minimum housing costs, child care costs, the sources are all listed within the Alice report. These are legitimate numbers done by Rutgers University from 2016. Those are monthly numbers. You can see that for that household, it adds up to an annual income of $52,584 per year. What's significant about that is when we have that poverty talk of, oh, that's poverty, the people lazy and living off the government, the 2019 federal poverty rate for a household of four is $25,100. If you're making $40,000 as that household, you are not living off the government, you are not receiving government benefits, and you are still $10,000 to $15,000 short of being what most of us consider financially stable. This is not a Terre Haute problem. It's not a city council problem. This is a national problem that the cost of living in our country is rising at a faster rate than wages are rising. And the gap between true financial stability is getting more and more difficult. I would share with you that the same report that you can get your hands on lists the total number of jobs available by occupation in the state of Indiana and the median wages for those jobs. This is just a cut of the top, 12, or so in the state of Indiana. And if you browse the list for the top five, you would probably feel that within the Wabash Valley, Vigo County, and even Terre Haute, those are very representative of the jobs that we have: retail, food prep, team assemblers, laborers, cashiers. And if you look at the median wage, you will quickly see that wage does not add up for two wage earners to be above that ALIS threshold. This is a tremendous issue in our community, and we thought within our United Way one that we should try to address from it. The study does two other very important things within the state of Indiana as it quantifies all that job data. Within Indiana, about 68% of the jobs available in Indiana pay less than $20 an hour. Almost half of them pay less than $15 an hour. I think you all know we are a manufacturing-heavy state. We're not a tech state. We're not those type of higher-paying wage jobs. So we know we have that struggle that we will be faced with. So the last pieces of data I would share with you, this is the state of Indiana county by county with the ALIS report. You can do the own comparisons to the Wabash Valley to the rest of the state. All you need to know in this slide is that the darker the shade, the higher the percent of households that live below that ALIS threshold and are struggling financially to get by. We in the Wabash Valley are in one of the higher pockets of the state, along with the Muncie area, for both poverty and ALIS rate. You can see where our county ranks. Vigo County is 84th out of 92 counties in the state of Indiana at the rate of ALIS households. In our five Indiana counties that our United Way serves, there are over 31,000 households that are financially struggling each year. That's our service area for United Way. We should be partnered with the governments in each of those counties, with the city councils in each of those counties, because this is not your problem. Which must be refreshing for someone to come to the podium and say, this is not your problem. This is our problem. We should be having nonprofits helping what you do. We should have business leaders committing their business and even the profits within those businesses to say, how can we get involved in these issues? Our United Way set a bold goal with the strategic plan I gave you online. Say, what if we could take that 33,000 numbers and in the next 20 years lower it by 10,000? And the skeptics would say, well, you're not going to solve poverty. But what you would find out is that might move Vigo County from 84th in the state into the 30s. That would be a remarkable change. I thought the city council would be interested. The ALIS report also breaks down metropolitan areas. So you can see within here that Terre Haute is the 14th largest metropolitan area by households in the state of Indiana, 58% with mailing addresses within the city limits of Terre Haute live below the ALIS threshold within our city. I don't say that to city council. I say that to the city council not to solve that. You can't. That's not all you can do. But maybe we could, if nonprofits like the United Way could bring other nonprofits to the table, and instead of focusing on all the individual things we do, start focusing together on real social issues that could change these numbers and bring business partners to the table as well. By the way, if you're curious, those are the only two cities with a higher ALIS rate than Terre Haute in the state of Indiana, Gary, Indiana, and Bloomington, Indiana, from there. So this is the new United Way. This is what I wanted to talk to you about. But what I want to leave you with is that we are advocates for you. We should be working for the city council. I gave a similar presentation to the Economic Development Board here, and I said, this is our economic development plan. We should be working on your behalf. So you might say, well, what is different about your United Way? Most of you who do know anything about United Way or have been donors know that we go into workplaces, we fundraise, we raise a lot of money, and then we give it to individual charities who are doing wonderful work on their own things. I've been a contributor to United Way and an advocate and volunteer for them for well over 30 years throughout my career. And I am one of the people who could answer, you know, I've contributed. United Way has poured almost $2 million a year into Terre Haute and the Wabash Valley for 50 years. And if someone asked me what significant social issue have we improved, I don't know that I could answer that in a positive way. Because we are a mile wide and 6 inches deep, and our board decided what we should be doing is getting not as wide and much deeper on the issues that matter. That is what our shift in that strategic plan is about. We have begun this year putting a structure together that instead of funding individual agencies for their applications, we are creating councils within the areas you see on the screen. Two councils under health, two councils under education, two councils under neighborhoods, and two under financial stability. We intend those councils to be comprised of government, business, and multiple nonprofits. We intend them to be the experts in the area to propose to us where should we take our resources and invest to move the needle on specific measurements that would start breaking that cycle of poverty by creating higher job skills, by creating better wealth management and financial stability in households, by improving graduation rates and early childhood education, and by lowering the drug rates and issues within the city that contribute to these things. These councils have already begun. And I'll give you the example within our health council. We have recently completed the forming of a substance use disorder council because the drugs within the Wabash Valley were the number one thing we heard at every community conversation. And we know the socioeconomic impact, and we know that that is driving the cycle of generational poverty. What can we do to move the needle? We have started to create objectives and measurements that we intend to report, but not just United Way. We want to report those to you. We want to report those to other nonprofits. We want to report those numbers to businesses. And we do that by having these experts come together and put investments within that. I will tell you that already this year, our United Way will invest $150,000 to $200,000 with this council. And we will ask them what RFP, what request for proposals and grants, what new products and initiatives can we put out there that will do a couple of things. We've already decided we will measure the drug arrest record within the counties that we serve. We will also use publicly available data on the number of children that are removed by DCS because of drug-related issues. Wouldn't it be nice over a five-year trend to see multiple nonprofits, cities, governments, trying to track that number and report on it and say, what are we doing to lower it, knowing it will make an impact? I'll leave you with the last slide. This is a totally different way for United Way to convene and collaborate with the best and the brightest. Members of all of these organizations sit on about a 20-person council on substance use disorder. Yes, you will see county government. Jason Brettlinger of the Terre Haute Police Drug Task Force sits on there and is guiding us, saying, here's where we need investments. Here's where we could move the needle on drug arrests, as well as treatment houses, hospitals, Hamilton centers. How about all of them and the experts drive where we should invest funding? We still expect to fund many of the organizations we have, but we expect their work to be dedicated to those same measurements. Let's lower the drug arrest record. Let's lower the DCS child removal rate record. These are the things United Way could do. I didn't come here today to talk to city council saying, hey, you guys need to do some stuff. You cannot possibly solve these problems on your own. But if we could get the 50 to 100 to nearly 500 nonprofits to work together on it, and if we could get government to say, hey, we're in this table, we want to help, and if we could get businesses to send their leadership and personnel to say, we're here to help, we can start moving the needle on these things. This is the United Way, Martha, that I'm really grateful you allowed me to come talk to the council about. I want you to know that you have an advocate in United Way, and United Ways across our country should be doing this with governments and businesses and city councils and say, let's work on these things together. I want more of you to sit on these councils. I want more of you to hear what we're trying to do, and I hope to be coming back and reporting some good results that are helping the work you do. Happy to answer any questions, but I know you're on a tight schedule tonight.
Any comments or questions for Richard real quickly? Yes.
Is that outstanding. This is what United Way should have been doing 20 years ago. I was working for the Wabash Valley Family Sports Center, and it was difficult communicating with the United Way. But your enthusiasm is wonderful.
That should not be the case. We should be out working with everyone.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you for your hard work on behalf of our community. Next agenda item, Michelle, reports from Board of Public Works.
There are none.
Reports from standing committees.
I do not believe there are any.
I don't believe there are any from non-standing committees either?
I think you're good to say that.
Okay, then let's go to the items previously tabled. First item.
General Ordinance 1, 2019, amending City Code Chapter 8, Article 1, Section 8-21, specific one-way street designations, deleting 8th Street from Holman Street to Maple Avenue and 9th Street from Holman Street to Maple Avenue, and amending Cherry Street designation as one-way street to Harding Avenue to 3rd Street.
Yes. Petitioner.
Mm-hmm. Members of the Council, Madam President, Chuck Innes, City Engineer, I'd ask that we table this for another month. Our counselor's just coming in, but we don't have a complete picture of the traffic study done yet, so I beg your indulgence for another month.
Okay. So for members of the public, that means that we would not, if we should table this, we wouldn't be acting on it at least for a month. So are there anybody from the public who'd like to comment on this item?
Donald Hyde, and I'm all for tabling it. Because I do not believe that the current information you're gathering will be worth anything by the end of the summer. There are four or five things that are coming along, at least I see it, and I cannot believe you can't see it coming, that are going to increase the traffic flow in Terre Haute, through Terre Haute, around Vigo County, immensely, and that already is going on. You have to be blind or deaf not to know that train traffic is increased. You have to understand that train traffic has been increased, and they've shook up the way they're running the trains, and so they're going to pick up the slack by having more semis to make what they can't deliver by train deliverable by the semis. That means there's going to be more semis on the road than there's been for a long time. You're having three things come to Terre Haute. They're going to get built, and within 2 years, it will increase the traffic. So you've got to be real careful what you do with your streets.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the public who'd like to comment on General Ordinance 1?
Just a point of parliamentary procedure. There is no discussion on a motion to table.
Thank you. I stand corrected by...
Nobody's made a motion.
Nobody's made a motion.
Does he want to make a comment?
Yes. Come on.
Somebody's going to make a motion.
Hello. My name's Jim Jeffers. I live at 2120 North 7th Street. I've lived there for 33 years. I work at 30 North 8th Street, which is the corner of 8th and Cherry, for the last 26 years. So I feel like I'm very knowledgeable of the streets that we're talking about here. I drive them multiple times a day, and I know some of you do also that live up in my area or that grew up in my area. And so I wrote some notes just so I don't ramble too much. Personally, I believe that, just from observation, that one-way streets move traffic very effectively. And I think that that's all going to change one way or another, whether we make these two-way streets or not, because of the dynamics of closing 8th Street. But going to 9th Street, there's enough cars that turn off of Wabash onto 9th Street that it was necessary to have a turn lane. There aren't very many of those downtown. Most of those cars that turn immediately go into the left lane to turn onto Cherry. Well, if this becomes a two-way street, that changes all that. And I don't know if it's going to make it necessary to have some kind of signal there or whatever. If you have cars coming at you on 9th Street, that's what I'm referring to. 8th Street, which is soon to be closed, cars coming north from South 8th, when they get up to Wabash, they're going to have to turn right or left and go. If they're going on north, they have to go to 9th Street, they have to go to 7th Street. It seems to me, at least in the area of downtown and through ISU campus, there's no need to go back to 8th Street, because there's nothing on ISU campus that you can't access from 9th Street or 7th Street. there's virtually no, there's no traffic west of 7th Street on ISU campus, or really east of 9th Street. You've got parking lots in between that access both of those streets. So there's really no need to, for access there to be two-way streets. Let's see. And going farther north on 9th Street, once you cross Lafayette, that's a one-lane street. Any way you look at it, it's a one-way street, one-lane street. There's no way cars could pass each other. And going north of Buckeye, which is the first street north of 8th Avenue, up to Maple Avenue, it's mostly lined with cars parked on both sides of the street. So coming up with a plan to make it, okay, we're only going to park on one side of the street, wouldn't work, because where would those people park? They're not parking out there because they've got a really nice garage in back, but they'd rather park in front. So that's another problem. 8th Street up there is a wider street. It's probably possible to for it to be a two-way street, but it kind of is, what's the point? Like I said, I've lived there for 33 years. Everything flows really nicely up there. Everybody up there is used to it. Going south, and it's kind of the same way south all the way to Holman, as far as the parking on both sides of the street. Now, those streets are wider. I think they could potentially accommodate it. It's kind of, I don't get the point. And as my dad said today when we talked about it, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I guess I don't understand what's broke about the system that we have.
Thank you very much. And I'll just say, in answer to Mr. Lynn's problem, we don't have a motion on the floor at this point. So thank you.
Move to table.
Second. It's been moved by Councilperson Nasser and seconded by Council.
We need to state when it's coming back.
Oh, would you like to say when it's coming back? Is
it
math?
You want to do it? And it's Azar, by the way. That's okay. Hard to tell.
Would you, Councilman Azar, would you like June 6th or June 13th?
That's fine.
Which one?
Which whatever one you want.
13th.
Will you have a?
Yes. When, 13th.
What's good for you?
13th.
Yes.
13th is fine.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor by Councilperson Azar. I apologize to you both. And a second from Councilperson Aller that this matter be tabled until
June 13th.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? It is so tabled.
Thank you.
Next item of business.
Special Ordinance 7, 2019, vacating a portion of North-South Public Alley located north of 8th Avenue, south of Plum Street, west of 40th Street, and east of Fruit Ridge Avenue. This is, I believe, a request for it to be withdrawn.
Yes. On behalf of the petitioner, we would ask that Special Ordinance Number 7 be withdrawn.
Move to withdraw.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Azar, seconded by Councilperson Garrison. Let this matter be withdrawn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you very much.
So withdrawn. Next item of business.
Resolution 1, 2019, designating an area commonly identified as 200 South 6th Street, Terre Haute, Indiana, as an economic revitalization area for the purpose of a 10-year real property tax abatement. This is 200 South 6th LLC. This is for adoption. You have documentation in front of you, and we may be you may be asked to amend it.
Petitioner.
Good evening, Madam President, fellow members of council. My name is Richard Shagley. I'm with the law firm of Wright, Shagley & Lowry, and tonight I'm in front of you regarding this request for a tax abatement. I'm representing the petitioner 200 South 6th Street. Before I get too far into this, I would like to first thank you for your understanding and allow me to table this 1 week. And two, I would like to thank Richard Payoff for coming here tonight. That was a great presentation. It's kind of scary. And I'd also like to thank him for bringing these issues to light. And I must say, the timing is incredible. So I guess I should thank Madam President for inviting Richard Payoff here tonight. to discuss some of the issues facing our community. And tonight I am here trying to address one of those issues in our community, that is quality, affordable housing, and especially quality, affordable housing in the downtown area. Currently, in my opinion, there isn't any quality, affordable downtown housing. And tonight, I'm here in front of you requesting a tax abatement for the project at the YMCA. As you know, and as I mentioned last week, this building has sat empty for over 10 years since the Y left and joined the YW to form the Y that's currently located at Fairbanks Park. As I mentioned last week, the intention of the petitioners, if everything falls into place, and when I say that, if they receive the 10-year tax abatement, if they receive the tax credits, and if they receive the assistance from redevelopment, it's their intentions to turn the current Y into a 34-unit housing development with 4 one-bedroom apartments, 19 two-bedroom apartments, 11 three-bedroom apartments, 4 of which will be ADA, and then a brand-new building with 6 three-bedroom townhouses. And when I say it's going to take a lot to make this work, you know, the tax credits are doable. With their scoring sheet, we need a 10-year to make it work. We have a commitment from redevelopment. I think you should receive from me a letter from Steve Witt. And I should have also apologized for that. I tried to email your city email addresses. I had some difficulty using the city's website, and that's why I was unfortunately required to use some of your personal emails, and for that I apologize. But you'll see by the information I sent you, there is tremendous support, in my opinion, from Steve Witt and the Redevelopment Commission. They're going to assist with up to $500,000 in TIF money to make this project work. They realize the importance of this in our area, and as a result have come on board and have been more than helpful in reaching the goal of bringing affordable housing to downtown Terre Haute. I think I addressed most of the concerns you had last week, with the exception of the assessed value issue. And with that, I have Ann McKinley, who is one of the consultants on this project. She is in from Indianapolis and has come to answer any questions, if any, that you may have regarding the assessed value. Ann, would you like to come up and...
Hi, good evening. My name is Ann McKinley, and I just want to thank you for allowing me to come in and present to you tonight. My understanding is that you had some questions over the assessed value, so I just wanted to take this time to answer any specific questions that you have and get you comfortable with that. The one thing I will add is that this project did receive an award of tax credit. This was announced in February of this year, so barring any unforeseen circumstances, tax abatement being one of them, the project will be proceeding and should be starting construction within the next several months.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on Resolution 1, 2019?
Donald Hyde, 1411 Poplar Street. Contrary to what you think, I'm here to tell you that you should approve this for two reasons. One, you haven't mentioned. YMCA is a historical building. It's been allowed to deteriorate and get worse, not better. It was built by not taxpayer money, but general funds back in the Depression era. It is probably one of the 10 most recognizable buildings in the city of Terre Haute for that reason. There are many reasons why the YMCA failed. But one of the things it didn't fail because of was support by the people that built it. And that building is standing and is already 90 years old. I hope that the people that are going to reclaim and repurpose the building does a good job for putting some of the tax dollars to help them do that. For one reason, I'd like to see them match what was done with the Warren School, where they built and they took Warren School, where I was told by the school corporation that it could not be repaired, it could not be turned back into a school that looks new. The state proved me wrong. They did a great job on that, and they built up all around it multiple affordable housing. Now, if the YMCA can be done that way, then they'll save a historical building, they'll repurpose it, and they'll put some affordable housing literally in downtown Terre Haute. It's a win-win-win, and I hope you approve it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? We will open it for questions and comments from the council. Yes, Councilor Smaller.
I just had one question, and I think I talked to Mr. Shagley about this earlier today and this evening. With it being assessed, it's a $5 million project, correct?
Total development cost is $10
million. $10 million, okay. So with it being a $10 million project, I don't understand why you're using $1 million as the assessed value. I understand it'll qualify for income approach, but with not knowing what the income approach is, why go with that versus the $10
million? So if you have an affordable housing project, the Indiana Code specifies that an affordable housing project has to be assessed based on this income approach. So it's an Indiana code that is making this judgment.
So are your figures here off of income approach?
Correct. And I know there's another, I looked up the GIS and some of the assessed records for some of the affordable housing projects in town. There's an 80-unit project over on, I'm going to get the street name wrong, over on Arleth Street, and 80-unit project, and it's assessed at $1.3 million. So it's pretty common practice with affordable housing to use this approach.
So this one's had income approach applied, and this is what they've said it's going to be?
Well, the assessor hasn't looked at this yet. So the assessor hasn't come and said, well, and looked at our numbers. This was our internal calculation of what we thought it would come back at.
And
so
how did you come to your figures for income approach?
So we took our net operating income for the project and subtracted out our estimated vacancy loss to get the effective gross income, and then we subtracted out the operating expenses and replacement reserves. So then we put a cap rate on it and then the effective tax rate for this district in Terre Haute. And so when you divide that total net operating income by this total percentage, that's how we came up with the assessed value. So this spreadsheet right here is actually one that I had from an attorney. It's a little old now since I've had it, but it's one that an attorney actually put together to kind of guess what that assessed value would be.
Now, I guess that's the only question I had. I would have rather, instead of guess, I would have rather had it ran through income. They can give you a ballpark on what the income approach would have been since it's a $10 million project. So I guess that's my only question I have. So I yield.
Any other questions or comments from council?
So
you don't agree with the process?
The only question I had is because they only have a $1 million on here for the assessment, and it's a $10 million project, so I wanted to see
and I think
how they came to their numbers. Because with working around, I've worked with income approach, I've worked with assessments and stuff, and I know that different counties handle things different, so I would have rather seen it from here local to know if it's not going to be $10 million on here, that it was going to be close to what ours is.
Ms. McKinley, did I hear you earlier say in regards to that that this income approach is was required for this? Or?
Correct. So there's actually two methods of evaluating affordable housing projects. So the income approach is the one that is most common. And when I went and I looked at the assessed value for this other larger tax credit project, that gave me comfort and some reassurance that these numbers were pretty accurate since the larger project was at that $1.3 million value.
Thank you. Councilperson Elliott.
So what does affordable housing mean related to this project?
So this is Section 42 housing. This is not Section 8 housing. This housing is set aside for individuals who are making up to $44,000 a year and meets just under the 40% ALIS rate that he was just talking about. So to live in one of these units, you have to have a source of income and you have to meet these income requirements. As the owner of the property, we have committed to setting aside rents at or below a certain level. So our rents range anywhere from $265 all the way up to $950 because we're required by the state Section 42 program to set aside our rents to cater to a lower income population.
Okay. So how many dollars worth of credits did this project get?
We got $826,000 in tax credits, and over 10 years, that's about $8.2 million in state tax or in federal tax credits.
$8.2 million.
But this is to build the project. The building has been sitting vacant for the last 10 years. And
I'm familiar with that. Drive by it all the time. So this is a $10 million project. Is that what I heard you say?
Correct.
40 units. $250,000 a unit is the math on that. Okay. And it's affordable housing, three-bedroom townhouses, low-income individuals. Okay. Got an average of $8,100 in gross potential rent per unit. That's the math on a $250,000 project, $250,000 per unit project. That's a lot of the tax credits obviously make this possible.
Yeah, without the tax credits, this building would sit vacant.
So how much property tax are you going to be paying to the city?
Well, I think that's why we're here for the abatement, is to reduce
some of
that.
So what is it without an abatement per year?
Based on the income approach, I have it at $46,000 a year.
$46,000 a year without an abatement. An abatement basically cuts it in half.
Yes.
$23,000 a year on a $10 million cost project. So does the abatement make the difference, make or break the project?
It does.
How does it make or break the project?
You know, we're setting aside our rent so low that we're not a market rate project where we can charge $1,100 for a two-bedroom unit. So because the rents are so low, because we're catering to this lower income population, we are limited to what we can charge. So that affects our bottom line gross potential rent, what we can charge, and then also it's operating expenses on a historic building are much higher than they would be on a new build, and so it's just the numbers are it's a feasible project, but it's not a cash cow.
Okay, but the abatement works out to be about $48 per month per unit. I mean, 23,000 divided by 40 divided by 12 is about $48 a month per unit is the abatement. And that makes or breaks your project.
It will make it very difficult because at $50 a month, I mean, that's...
I mean that's a requirement before we are supposed to approve an abatement, from what I understand, is whether the abatement makes or breaks the project.
Yeah, the numbers are very, very tight. I mean, the project can't support $50,000 in real estate
taxes. The
rents
can't be any higher.
No. We're limited by the tax credit program, and then there's no room to go anywhere higher on the rents. And we wouldn't want to because we are catering to that population that does have a lower income.
Okay. And we're the city that's providing the services, you know, to the project, the public safety, the so on and so forth, the police, fire, you know, everything else that's required. And we're being asked to do that at a 50% discount the first 10 years, which means we get $23,000 a year to provide those services. So that's the way I try to look at it, and then I try to look at, well, what's the incremental cost of the city to providing those services. So I yield.
Yes, Councilperson Nation.
It's my understanding from previous conversations that part of your ask here involves the scorecard that you needed to fill out to qualify for the tax credits themselves. And is it true that you got points toward that for the idea that the city would give a tax abatement to this project?
Correct. So these applications for tax credits are extremely competitive. There was about 60 applications last year, and maybe 20 of those got funded. So it's extremely competitive, and so one of the things that the state always looks for when you're applying for these credits is that you have local support, that this is a project that the community wants to see that's going to make a difference. And so the way we were able to work with Steve in the tax abatement was one of the things we identified that helped us get those points, as well as the TIF. So without that tax abatement ask and without the TIF, we wouldn't have received the credits.
Yeah, and that's my point. It's not really the amounts of money that are involved, because if you look at this tax abatement schedule and the packet that Richard gave us, the second page of it is the amount that we're actually abating, and the total amount of taxes abated is $126,000 over 10 years. Am I right about that? It's the bottom line, right corner, page 2. Mm-hmm. Starts with $34,000, scales down to zero at year 7, and the estimated tax abatement savings for your company, the taxes you're not paying, $125,800.10. So again, I'm not trying to belabor the numbers. What I'm trying to belabor is the idea that if we don't do the thing that we said we would do on the front end with the tax abatement and with the involvement of the TIF district, then I believe that the project won't go. Often I hear those as empty promises or empty threats.
But I don't recall this body saying anything about that. Steve's letter talks about real property tax abatement savings of approximately $547,000.
You're correct that this body hasn't taken any kind of action on this yet.
And Steve's letter says $547,000 of tax abatement savings. We just got that today, right?
Estimate. I mean,
there's a big difference between 547 and 230.
There is, and I would suspect that difference is between the income approach and the other approach, which is 10 times more.
I'm not willing to speculate on what it is because, you know, somebody else Steve made his calculation. I don't know how he got there.
Steve usually talks about the tool that's online that the utilities use. Does anybody else remember what that tool is or remember what he's talking about?
It's the Southwest Indiana Economic.
Yeah. And he talks about plugging numbers into that and generating estimates. But I'll bet that what he used was $10 million for a $10 million project. But, again, I shouldn't be speculating. My point is simply that this is an opportunity to help this project go. And I think that it's important. So I yield.
Any other questions or Yes, Councilperson Azar.
Just a couple questions. First of all, what's the taxes now being paid in? Do you know that?
Yeah, it's, what is it, approximately 46 a year, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head what the current taxes are.
Currently it's assessed at $1 million with the projection of an additional approximately $100,000. So it doesn't go up significantly. But I think the key is what Councilman Nation struck upon, is that this isn't a significant amount. This isn't a significant abatement, except for the fact that it does show the other people involved that Terre Haute is behind this project. And as Ann had stated, as what's been mentioned, in applying for the tax credits, they indicated a 10-year tax abatement for the maximum points that they could receive, similar to our application for tax abatements. And because of the application, and I suspect some luck because of the number of applicants, they were awarded it, and that was based upon the understanding, the hope that they'd receive a 10-year abatement from the City of Terre Haute, and then the support from the TIF money. And it's all those things together that make these work, and without one of them, it doesn't work.
I yield to you, Amy, for a minute.
Councilperson Holler.
And I think it's great what you guys are trying to do. I'm not, by asking these questions, I'm not saying that I'm against it or for it, but I just, there's, with working around this, I know there's 100 different applications out there that you can plug numbers into and come up with an income approach or a gross rent multiplier or however else, you know, the three different ways there are to assess property. The income approach and the gross rent multiplier are based on an area, on what the rents go for in an area, the area that you're talking about. As it sits right now, it's being assessed at $1 million, basically what it is now. And you're going to put a new building on there with more apartments.
On the corner, yeah.
And you're going to update the old building and put apartments in there with more income. I would feel better if I had an estimate that came from either our county assessor or our Harrison assessor saying this is an estimated of what we're going to say the income approach is going to be.
I think there's one number you need to focus on, and that's 40. That's 40 families who are going to have affordable housing, good quality affordable housing. You don't have to drive too far in our community to realize that there is some housing issues. And I think Mr. Pionk would agree with me, and I would guess all of you would agree that there are areas of this town and there are people living in they're living in places they shouldn't have to live in. And this project will give 40 families their ability to get out of that condition.
Councilor
Personnel. Yeah, on the scoring sheet, there's a line item here. Council may award one bonus point if a substantial percentage of the total fees for construction work associated with the project are paid to companies licensed to do business in Vigo County. So what local companies are going to be involved in this?
Okay. No companies have been finalized. Obviously, this has not been put out to bid.
But so how can we take that point?
Well, here's, they have, in the trying to determine costs, they have contacted people on this list. In particular, they've contacted BNS Plumbing with HVAC and Plumbing, which is a good local contractor, and then Crown Electric for electrical, and Lone Brothers for the roofing.
Who's the general?
The general is
Commonwealth is the general contractor, but we always like to reach out to local contractors and get that local participation.
This will be put out to bid, and I was, you know, I think most of you know me and where I stand on certain issues,
And I was pleased when I requested and was provided this list. I was happy to see B&S Plumbing, knowing their background, and Crown Electric, as well as Lowe Brothers. These are good contractors on this list, good local contractors. They will, the local people will get to get an opportunity to bid on all the work that is done.
But Richard, I see five local contractors and about 15 non-local on this list.
There are some
five local and 15 non-local.
These are people that the ones highlighted are the ones that they contacted. I guess this is a possible list.
But a lot of the phone numbers are 317.
I understand that, but the ones in that are highlighted in yellow are the ones that they contacted to assist with the estimating.
Okay, but it's five.
Yeah. This is not a exclusive list. It's going to be put out to bid, and anybody will be able to bid on it.
Okay, but it says a substantial percentage that the total fees for construction are paid to companies licensed to do business in Vigo County.
Right.
And we don't know the answer to that then.
You know, we always try to give priority to the local contractors. Without having bids in, it's hard to say what they're going to come back with. But given the opportunity, given equivalent bids, local contractors are preferred.
Okay. My point is, you claim the point, but you don't know what the answer is.
In theory, no one would ever get a point for that if you had to have it. In theory, it'd be very difficult to obtain that point because you would be putting the cart way before the horse if you were locking in bids on a project you didn't know where to go.
I mean, some people do know who their contractor's going to be. You know who your general's going to be. So some people do know who their general's going to be at the time they come ask for this. So.
Can I have the floor back?
Yes, you may.
Okay, I had one other question here. On your rent, gross potential rent, and the income value approach, which I'm not as familiar with as Amy is, does this include the three townhouses?
Yes, this is all 40 units.
Well, no, but the 40 units, there's 40 in the...
34 in the YMCA, and then there are
and then six
townhomes.
Yes. Okay. Now, and the townhouses are considered affordable?
They are. They were all awarded under this tax credit project, so all 40 units are affordable. And we're capped, our rents are capped based on federal guidelines.
So basically the cap was $900 and some, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the cap is actually a little bit higher, but we can't really go above market. We want to keep it affordable. So our equity investors and everyone require that we keep it around that 950 mark.
Okay. Thank you. I yield.
Yes, Councilor.
Okay, a couple more questions. The six units, is that what's going to run about $900 a month rent?
Yes. Well, I don't know. Those are all three bedrooms, so they'll be the higher incomes, but we had a spreadsheet where we broke it down.
There's going to be 11 3-bedrooms in the Y.
11 3-bedrooms?
In the Y. 19 2-bedrooms and 4 1-bedrooms in the Y building. And then the new building of 6 3-bedroom townhouses.
So what I'm wanting to know is how many are going to be at $900 rent and how many are going to be at the $265 rent?
That would be a lot based on the person that applies.
Yeah, it's hard to say. So there's... 10 units set aside for 30% rents, which are your 260 to 350 range. And then there's another 10 that are set for at 40% area median income, which is closer to the 550, 650 range. And then there's some higher ones that are closer to that 750, 950 range. So it's spread out based on IHCDA's point scoring system. And so we do have units set aside at 30, 40, 60, and 80%.
Okay.
I guess that's my question, because when you're figuring income approach, normally you've got to know how many apartments versus how much rent.
Yeah, and we have that all broken down, but there's so many different...
So if this is a 10-year tax abatement, and this is contingent on a 10-year tax abatement, after the 10 years... how are you going to fund it?
setting up a reserve and making sure there's money available. Operating expenses, the rents do rise a little bit each year, so additional rents that we're actually allowed to charge by the end of year 10.
So there'll be rent increases over time?
Not to exceed anything that's out of the market or with out of the guidelines.
Are you?
Nobody's going to have their rent increase $300. It's never going to be a market rate project. And I think it's also worth noting that Commonwealth has never sold one of their projects, long-term management, long-term owner, and so extra invested to make sure this project stays up to date and in good condition.
Aya.
Any other questions? Yes, Councilperson Garrison.
I know we covered some of this. I want to go through it again. The property taxes that are being paid today, was that 26?
We said about 45,000, but don't quote me on that.
Okay, 45,000.
Yeah,
after 10 years, we're going to be approximately, I know that's a big estimate. What do you think it would be in 10 years?
45,000.
Sorry, pardon me?
Closer to 45,000.
45, okay, so it's kind of a wash at that point. Now, if this doesn't go and the property sits and eventually gets demolished, What would we pay in property tax after demolition?
Not much.
Not much.
Less than 10.
Less than 10. Well, I like the project. I know you guys put a lot of work into this. I think back 8 or 10 years ago, I think one of the goals in downtown Terre Haute was to add more people. And you said 40, 45 families. I don't know what that total would be. But it kind of meets that goal, too. So, I like the project. I know we've talked about it a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to approve. We have to, this is first time or second time reading? Or
There's quite a few amendments.
Oh, amendment. Okay.
Sorry.
I'll make a motion to amend. Are you ready to do that?
Yeah.
Make a motion to amend Resolution 1, 2019.
Think the petitioner should specifically state, because we don't have an actual amended version in front of you.
Okay, I got
you. Should state what the amendments are.
All right, I'll hold on the motion then. You want to do that now or?
We don't have it.
Or I can help him out.
I don't have any amendments in front.
Okay, so in front of you, there was a copy of his email that had all of the attachments.
Yes.
That was stapled together. Mm-hmm. There is an Exhibit B, which says City of Terre Haute Real Property Tax Abatement Guideline Scoring Criteria.
Mm-hmm.
That is amended from the initial filing, which I'll let him explain what's changed.
Martha, I yield. There's more discussion.
Yes, there's an additional.
Okay.
And then, I can go ahead. The other amendment is the SB 1. There was a change to the number of additional employees.
Okay. Apparently, there is a little more discussion, and we'll allow Councilperson Arwood. Is this tax abatement, is this something that we have to vote on this month, or would it delay you if it was held off for a month?
It would delay us for a month.
But would there be a problem with any of the other funding or anything? I'm not against the project, but there's questions, and we've got amendments here and different things, so that there's questions,
I think realistically, the way concern would be is another 30 days, you push back construction schedules, and now all of a sudden you're getting closer to winter, which increases the cost of construction.
I understand that. I was just asking what the other credits and different
I'm not aware of any anything fatal if it's bumped, but it's just the long-term cost associated with that.
Because like I said, I'm not against it, but I still have questions, and there's amendments, and we don't have an amended copy in front of us.
Well, the amendment is simply the change of the exhibit, as Michelle stated. There was a rescoring of the application, and then the SB1 was changed from 2 employer to 1 employer, and that was the only change on the SB1. The application is different in that there was a little bit of math error on the first page of points, and then they reduced the bonus points from 4 to 2. Those were the only changes. And those are shown in the exhibits that you received via email yesterday.
I yield.
Yes, Councilor Snelling.
Yeah. There's one other sentence in there, one other paragraph in this resolution that well bothers me, and I'm going to read it. Whereas the Common Council of the City of Terre Haute, Indiana, has found the subject property to be an area within the boundaries of the City of Terre Haute, which area has become undesirable for or impossible of normal development and occupancy as it has existed as a residential neighborhood because of a lack of development, cessation of growth, and deterioration of improvements which have impaired values or prevented a normal development of property or use of property, and such as is an area declining in tax revenues. And I just don't think that describes our downtown right now.
I have the floor.
Yes. Do you
yield?
Councilperson Nation.
Earl, that's boilerplate from every single tax abatement you've ever seen. So I suggest that you familiarize yourself with this language and get used to it, because that's, you're going to see it every time we consider one of these. And I agree with you that it doesn't, that it's boilerplate language that no longer reflects the area that we're actually talking about, but it is part of what needs to happen to give it, to award a tax abatement. Richard, am I correct in,
I agree with you.
In making that?
The other thing, which you, as you stated earlier, driven by this building, I will disclose I'm not in the construction business, but there's a reason this building sat empty for over 10 years. This is an old building. They don't get new work. This project is only a go because of the tax credits, the possible tax abatement, and assistance tip. A normal, you know, without those elements, this project doesn't go. And I don't know what the future of this building is except for demolition. And even the cost of that, I can't imagine, because of the age of the building. Plus, it's a historical building. There's a reason this building hasn't been developed. This is the chance to make that happen. And this isn't the first group that's come through and looked at this building. You know, you look at the Deming, the project just east of there on Cherry. You look at Annex 41, you look at the Icon building. The same groups that did those projects went through this building, and they all passed. And why, I can only suspect, but we have a, with the assistance of Commonwealth and 200 South 6th Street, you know, this is a possibility to use this building for what I believe to be a good use, especially after hearing the presentation tonight. This is a chance to change the lives of 40 families going forward. And to do that, we need the assistance from the city with this tax payment.
So you think that merits 2 bonus points because it's an old,
absolutely,
building that was claimed on the, to get to the 20?
Absolutely.
And this building was listed on the top 10 most endangered structures for the state of Indiana, Indiana landmarks.
I yield.
Okay. Any other comment? yes, Councilor Smith.
If there's no further comment, I move that we amend
this ordinance as presented. We've got the changes to Exhibit B and the refigured statement of benefits in which the number changed from 2 estimated employees down to 1. So I move that we make the amendments that have been presented to us.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation and seconded by Councilperson Garrison that this matter be amended as stated. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Madam President.
The motion passes.
Madam President.
Yes.
I move for approval of the amended version of Resolution 1, 2019.
Just for clarification, we're adopting.
I move for adoption of Resolution Number 1, 2019, as amended.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation and seconded by Councilperson...
Paper ballot.
Paper ballot? By Councilperson Nation, that this resolution be adopted. It has been requested by Councilperson Nasser that this be a paper ballot. The clerk would assist us in that.
Madam President,
yes.
Would you explain paper ballot? We haven't done that very often.
Yes.
And I think there might be some confusion out there.
Yeah, I think we did it one other time.
We did, yeah.
We do have a provision where a ballot can be taken in written form. We do put our names on those ballots and our vote, and those are reported.
Excited.
When roll call in.
Easier. And those are read after the vote.
Huh? Roll room. Call.
Right.
Easy.
Right.
When did
the survivor sign
up? Protect themselves.
And any member of council can request that. And so.
Sorry, Michelle.
This is all the second time we've done this. Madam President, the lady who would like to make a comment, I believe she's given an opportunity for discussion.
We gave an opportunity for public comment at that time, yeah. I believe.
Yeah, I was going to say, do I not get a vote?
What is Resolution 1, 2019?
Today is the 9th.
9th?
Okay, thank you, Michelle.
9th.
Mm-hmm.
You press me technically.
I need that. So we're not telling you.
That's right. You can hold for a moment.
Be a video.
Good to see you.
Good to see you again.
Give 1 second, please.
If we want it.
Huh?
This is for adoption at this point.
Yes.
Step will be confirmation.
Well, so we have
right, but if we wanted a table, would we abstain? Or we vote?
Well, you guys still got to confirm it next meeting.
Okay.
Right?
Next month.
And
maybe by then we'll have some of the answers.
So this is step one.
So still we would vote next month.
We still have to do, no, it's not. If it doesn't pass next month, then it does not get enacted.
Okay.
In tax abatement, we would vote this month on this resolution, and next month we would confirm, if it passes this month, we would confirm it next month. So the next month would be the final.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for clarifying.
And it could be a yes or no.
Right.
That's happened before.
That's what I said. I can get my answers before next month.
You know what I mean? Still got one more chance.
back up so you see.
Sorry, my head's in the way.
I have one point of order question.
Yes.
If this comes up, when it comes up next month for confirmation, can it still be amended?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, where's the city attorney?
City attorney?
He doesn't even know the answer.
Mr. Felling, my question is, since this, if it is approved for adoption tonight, if it comes up, and then that means it will come up for confirmation next month, is it possible to amend this next month?
I don't believe so.
I think I'm
in disagreement with the city clerk, but I think what you're doing now is essentially passing the resolution as it stands. What you're doing 30 days from now is confirming whether or not that abatement will stay in place the way that it was originally written. I think you're either going to vote to confirm or to not confirm, and then if you would not confirm it, they would then have to reapply, and there'd have to be a substantial difference for a new tax abatement. So I think you'd restart.
Whatever passes tonight is what you'll vote on next.
If it's confirmed, yes.
Okay. If it's not, and just to clarify, if it's not confirmed next month, that does not mean they would have to wait. Would they have to wait 12 months to reapply?
Not as long as there's a substantial difference.
Reducing the number of years of the abatement, is that substantial?
Yes,
I would say that's probably.
Okay, that's what I was. That's why I asked about amending. Thank you.
Following the new council rules on ballot voting, I will read each council person's name and how they voted. The council president is always last. Councilperson Amy Aller, yes. Councilperson George Azar, yes. Councilperson Curtis DeBon, yes. Councilperson Earl Elliott, no. Councilperson Neil Garrison, yes. Councilperson Don Morris, no. Councilperson Karim Nasser, no. Councilperson Todd Nation, yes. And Council President Martha Crossan, yes. That is
6
yes, 3 no.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. The resolution is adopted.
Thank you very much.
One quick note.
Yes.
I would like, before we have to vote on this next month, I would like to have some income approach figured from local. And I'd also like to have more confirmation on who is going to be the contractors. I yield.
Okay. Councilwoman Aller, when you say local, you're talking about the assessor's office here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Off of our rents and our areas.
Okay. This is
true. Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Next item, please.
Special Ordinance 9, 2019. Rezoning of property located at 1706 Harding Avenue and 207 Holman Street. Area planning gave a favorable with conditions recommendation. Just as a reminder, this is on second reading.
Petitioner.
Jeff Lind Law Firm. It's kind of tough walking up here after Mr. Shagley. We talked about this last week. Zach and Courtney Reagan are purchasing real estate just west of 3rd and Holman Street on land contract. They discovered they want to add a second use. They have an M1 use in it right now as a custodial business. They want a second use, and in inquiring as to whether or not they were okay with the second use, they discovered to their chagrin, really, that it's R1. I mean, it's a stone building, could have never been used as a residence, but it's owned R1. We want to get it into proper zoning so that both current use and the next use, a ceramic painting of metal, will comply with the city's zoning code.
Is anyone from the public who would like to speak on Special Ordinance 9, 2019?
Donald Hyde, 1411 Poplar Street. I worked in a place that did similar work to what these gentlemen are going to do. Now, if they properly have their workers working properly with the breathing equipment to protect them breathing, they won't have the problems that I had. With that said, if indeed they also come up with some way to properly vent the building, that would also help keep it safe. I don't know. I think you need to ask some true questions on this on a safety matter. But as far as economic or as far as it being a danger to community at large, nah. It's not the community at large I'm worried about. It's the people that work there. Thank you.
I appreciate that, Mr. Hyden. I think that the gentleman who's running the business did speak to us on that last week and told us about that process, and I think you were present when he did. So if he wants to do it again, that's fine, but I, unless somebody else
thinks. Council members were here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Correct. Is there anybody else in the public who would like to speak on Special Ordinance 9? Council?
Mr. President?
Yes, Councilperson Oliver.
If there's no further questions, I move that we pass Special Ordinance 9, 2019, as presented.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Oliver and seconded by Councilperson Nassar that we adopt Special Ordinance 9, or approve Special Ordinance 9, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ordinance is passed. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next item of business.
Special Ordinance 11, 2019, rezoning of property located at 2528 South 7th Street. Area planning gave a favorable with conditions recommendation. And again, this is on second reading.
Yes, petitioner.
My name is Lisa Lively. The address is 2528 South 7th Street. We're asking for the rezoning from R1 to R1 plan development for the two single-family properties that are on this property.
Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak on Special Ordinance 11, 2019? Council?
Madam President?
Yes.
There's no further questions. I move that we pass Special Ordinance 11, 2019, as presented.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Aller and seconded by Councilperson DeBon that we approve Special Ordinance 11, 2019. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ordinance passes. Thank you, ma'am.
Madam President.
General Ordinance 4, 2019, amending City Code Chapter 6, Article 4, Division 2, Animal Control Regulations. This is on first reading.
I was going to request a five-minute recess.
I'll second that request.
The request is granted. We had a request for a five-minute recess. Okay, thank you. We are now called to order. Next item on the agenda.
You sure we can't recess again? General Ordinance 4, amending City Code Chapter 6, Article 4, Division 2, Animal Control Regulations.
Mr. City Attorney.
Council, Madam President, Eddie Felling, City Attorney. As you're all aware, this ordinance originally came up, I believe, last month. It may have been in March. I don't recall. And we withdrew that motion or that ordinance to give the committee an opportunity to provide some input and some changes to the ordinance that was originally presented. Generally, what this ordinance was made to do was to help make the lives of our code enforcement officers a little bit easier. One of the biggest changes that was noted in the animal control ordinance was our new beekeeping portion, and that's what our committee met and brought back three primary concerns that they want to change and added to this ordinance that's before you here today. In addition to those three, there were two changes that were made, and I did take a little bit of a privilege, and I made those changes based upon conversations I had with council members in the interim. I want to point those out first. First of all, in Section 6-78, inspections of animals and premises authorized, there was a concern by a constituent that it was a very broad statement there originally where code enforcement officers could enter people's property essentially at any time if they had a pet license. So if you've got a dog, this reads that a law enforcement officer could just come into your house at any given time. So what we did, our aim here was to clarify that anybody that has a normal pet licensing, that doesn't give code enforcement the ability to just go into your homes. Well, the intent of that section and how it's been used by our code enforcement officers are for breeders, for example, this beekeeping portion, to allow them to inspect the area where this activity that's a little bit beyond the normal scope of just being a dog or cat owner. Number two, the other change that was made that was not done at the direction of the committee was to reduce the new fees for the beekeeping. Previously, it was a $50 a year fee. I've reduced that to a $25 fee. If there's any comments from the council, obviously we can address that as well, but we've cut that in half. Because it's an annual fee, we thought that would be reasonable. As far as the committee request, what we've done is increase the maximum of hives to 8, and we have decreased the distance that a hive would have to be located from either a property line or another or a public street down from 75 feet to 10 feet, and that was based upon our public input. Now, I did drop the ball, and you can blame me. It won't be my last mistake, I promise. As we were going back and forth with these changes, the other request from the committee was to add a signage requirement on the properties that were housing bees. Unfortunately, that is not in the version that's before you here today. I am concerned about amending it because it does make this ordinance more restrictive. However, I would urge the council that if you're so inclined to go ahead and move forward with this here today, as part of our permitting process, I'm going to go ahead and request that there be a disclaimer and a notice given to those that are requesting a permit to go ahead and have a sign. And as we anticipate the possibility of considering yet another change to our animal control ordinance, I think that's something that can very easily be tacked on at a later date. And hopefully if this does pass, we can keep our beekeepers from having to come back yet again for another change. So I do apologize for that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Is there a member of the public who would like to comment on General Ordinance 4, 2019?
Donald Hyde, 1411 Poplar Street. Both last time I was here and this time now they don't even mention it. And I'm wondering why that is. One of the things that I question in our so-called healthy schools, healthy people, right now, the price of eggs continue to go up, and they've come up with all kinds of ways to have different kinds of eggs, some of them healthy, some of them whatever. I believe that a lot of people that could afford to do this would, if they could, have some chickens around.
Mr. Hyde, if I could just interrupt you for a minute to say, maybe this will answer your question. We are forming an ad hoc committee to consider a possible amendment to this ordinance with regard to chickens being kept in the city, and that committee is in the state of being formed, and we hopefully within the next 4 to 6 weeks, we will be announcing that committee, and they will be finding dates to meet, but we are going to address that issue.
Well, you're correct. That's
okay.
All I care about.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Are there any other comments on General Ordinance 4 from the public?
Lynn Mullins at 2200 Spang Avenue, Tarrytown. Just one quick one. The $50 fee, which was $25, is much, much better. However, I know that our club has a lot of members that are not in the city, but we all educate. We go to the schools. We were just at the Earth Day at St. Mary's. We had actually live bees there. So we do a lot of education. And the thing is, there was to buy a new hive, we just bought 3-pound packages, $125. That's just about 8,000 bees. So they're expensive. It's a great hobby, expensive. It provides lots of services. If you have flowers, you have to have a pollinator to get those. So I'm just suggesting that if you have to have us a fee, let's make it like 10 bucks. Those people that you want them to register the bees so you'll know where they're at, I think that's a good idea for the no spray, because that spray will weaken the hives. But it's a nominal fee of 10 bucks. I think everybody would go ahead and pay that, whereas if there'd probably be stealth beekeepers if you make it a $50 or more, or even $25. So otherwise, I thank you for helping us with this. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else in the public?
I'm Kevin Southwood, and I'd just like to make a comment about the animal issue. You know, does have something to do with bees, but, you know, for years and hell since before I was even born, you know, they've had problems with the way horrific treatment of animals. You know, we're talking about bees, and you have people all over the place that have pets or pups and kittens. If you talk to them about, hey, why don't you get that dog or your pet spayed or neutered, they look at you like they just seen Bigfoot. It's an ongoing thing. To me, if I'd give them like a 3-year time frame, if you're not like a licensed breeder or something, your animal isn't spayed or neutered, it has kittens or pets, you cannot be employed in the city or the county. That would stop all these dogs and cats running all over the place. You know, and you'll see people, dogs chase people on bicycles. You know, people let their dogs run loose. Well, I think they ought to just run free and frolic and, you know, run around. No, what they want to do is they let their dog loose and go take a big dump in somebody else's yard. And then, you know, you talk about bees. You know, too close to a property line. I bet if you asked a survey in Terre Haute, would you rather have a beehive next door or a pigsty? I bet most people would say, I'd rather have a beehive. You know, everybody be buzzing in Terre Haute and Bigel County. Governor Hokum come over here and make everybody take a urine test. You know, all the people over here buzzing. Well, that's it.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? Yes, one more. Thank you.
Hello. Bill Heyman, 1900 North 7th Street. I'm the owner of Atlantis Aquatic Gardens on North 13th Street. I'm familiar with most of the folks on the council and quite a few people in the room. Hello. You remember me from a few years back when we had issues with concerns about our lion and tiger either getting loose or doing something horrible. None of that ever happened. The lions and tigers are gone now. They died from old age. The cougar we had pretty recently unfortunately died in a veterinary mishap. So we aren't quite the threat to the people who were concerned about us that we used to be, but we do have some exotic animals. I would point out to you that Atlantis is a tropical fish store. That's our function, as always has been. We started in 1975 on the corner of 13th and 8th Avenue and are still there. Our competition, Inland Aquatics, retired recently because it's very difficult to make a living in retail anymore. As most of you know, we're seeing brick-and-mortar stores die left and right. We would like to not be one of those. And we may, with the coming overpass, be an extinct species anyway pretty soon. So it may be a moot point. But to my point, I commend our animal control officers for what they've done. Being in touch with animal people a lot, I have stories I can tell you from renters and other people of the gross mishandling of owning animals. And it's a shame. But we're making improvements. I think city code enforcement people, you don't see dogs and cats running the street like we used to. I think they've done a tremendous job. If changes in this ordinance will help that, I'm all for it. I don't have any problem with the ordinance the way it's written. But to my point, we are regulated by the federal government. It's our USDA license. It's not easy to have one of those. But we had that way back when we had the lion many years ago, because you have to, if you have a open to the public exhibit with large carnivorous animals, you have to have a USDA license. That brings in veterinarian inspectors who are trained and knowledgeable in these animals and in a lot of animals to make sure you're doing a good job, the public won't get hurt, and that the animals aren't hurt. I went before committees at the state level when ordinances were proposed there some years ago to outlaw or regulate these animals. I've been present at the county council level when the county ordinance was changed, and have offered my help to use PJAC, Pedestrian Joint Advisory Council, and others to help write a good ordinance. Very difficult to write an ordinance that controls people and animals. It's a complex subject. So to keep it simple, and to get to my point, I'm all for the ordinance except for the first page. As I said, we're USDA regulated. When we're at the state level, several of the representatives pointed out and voted to exempt USDA facilities from the state inspectors. And we did that at the county level as well. The reason is we don't need double regulation for these facilities. Ours is the only one in Terre Haute that is USDA, but we don't need to have inspectors come in and tell us to do something differently than the USDA is telling us to do. State inspectors agreed. They don't want to tell you to build a round pen if the state said you have to have a square pen, and many other reasons. We are already regulated. We don't need more inspections. We've never had an accident in the 43 years we've been there. Now, I'd like to keep these animals in front of kids. The gentleman with the United Way did a tremendous job showing how important our community needs to work on poverty and kids in need. And there are days in our store when we'll have literally groups of 10 or 15 kids that are running the street, 8, 10, 12-year-old kids with no adults. They'll come to our store and spend a half an hour in there. And they behave themselves. They know they get kicked out if they don't. But while they're there, we have a captive audience. We have the opportunity to teach them values, to teach them kindness to animals. And I don't want to have to give that up. So if the overpass doesn't take us out, leaving us exposed in this ordinance could at least make us eliminate all the animals other than fish. And I don't want to be double regulated. So the only difference I really saw in the old ordinance and the new one is, let me read to you at the very bottom of the old one, purpose. The terms and provisions of this division shall not apply to any public or privately owned zoological park or other facility that is licensed or registered prior to the enactment of this division and which remains so licensed or registered by the United States Department of Agriculture under the Federal Animal Welfare Act of 1977, U.S.C. 2131. So my point is, first of all, I'm here to help. The committee wants to call on me to share my experience with what is enforceable, what can put teeth into an ordinance, I'm here to help. But please, if I may, can do this. I would like you to amend the ordinance. So we can stay where we are. That's basically all I wanted. I just wanted to mention that we enjoy it, we love what we do, and we'd like to keep doing it, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Sorry, I didn't mean to push you out of the way. May I speak to that briefly? I apologize. That's very interesting. This is the first I've heard this. I did amend that on my own as we had gone through so many months. There was actually quite a large discussion about whether or not any zoological parks even existed within the city and why that language existed to begin with. So the reason that language is stricken from the current ordinance is because we didn't believe such a thing existed and the language was dated. So from my standpoint, I want to make it clear to the council, you are more than welcome to make that amendment here this evening. You most certainly can tonight, and I have no objection to that.
Thank you. Any other question, any other comment or anything, Ms. Garnier? Okay, thank you. Is there any other person from the public who would like to comment on General Ordinance 4? Okay. If not, counsel, any questions or comments? Councilperson Nation?
Just so that I can understand Bill's request here, what I have before me doesn't include Section 6-6A purpose. Mm-hmm. It starts at Section 6-69.
So I'd
like to make that amendment, but I don't know how.
Is it in there?
Or I'd like to propose that amendment.
Here's it.
Yes. Well,
I will strike that. Perhaps as we've gone through this, 6-68 is not part of the amendments that are here. So if it's in 6-68, what I would have been referring to would have been something in the body later on. However, that's a catch-all in 6-68, so I think it would apply. You wouldn't need to make any amendments.
It still exists, is what you're saying.
Correct, yeah. There won't be
because
changes
we're not doing anything to that section.
If I understand correctly,
that's still there.
That language can be
just it's already there. Yeah, this is only applies to 6-69 and on.
Okay. Thank you. Well,
but it's good to know.
So we don't need to amend.
So
no.
We don't need to know.
Correct.
Problem solved.
But while I still have the floor,
yes.
I also am sympathetic to Len's comment mm-hmm. about lowering the fee further from 50 to 25 to, geez, I guess if we have to propose something, $10 is okay, but you know these people are actually doing a public service. that's what beekeepers are doing, and they're doing it at their own expense. I mean, I would propose that we charge them zero to do it, but along those lines, I mean, just to keep things moving. I'll put my money where my mouth is. I propose that we amend General Ordinance Number 4, 2019.
We have to vote to
vote. Before we even
consider this for action.
Okay, sorry. So to back up even further, I move that we vote on General Ordinance Number 4, 2019.
Second. It's been moved by Councilperson Nation and seconded by Councilperson Aller that we vote to vote on General Ordinance 4, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. For the benefit of the public, that's because this is here on first reading tonight, so we have to take special action to take action on it. I'm sorry. Councilperson Mason.
Yeah, actually, I was looking for the fee schedule, but I think I'm looking in the wrong place.
6-75G. Subsection G, sub 1.
Page 11.
Okay, so I move that we amend, let's go up a little bit, section 6-75, the fee at subsection G number 1 from 25. Well, no, from 50 as it's presented, right?
It's 25. It's 25.
It is 25, but from 25 down to 0.
Down to what?
0.
No, I prefer it be 0.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation and seconded by Councilperson Aller that section 6-75G, miscellaneous license 1, be amended to the amount of 0. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is the proposed ordinance is amended.
Madam President.
Councilperson Nation.
I move that we now. Now, do we act on the other amendments, proposed amendments, or?
No, we withdrew the previous
there
motion,
no
so it's our ordinance. So.
Sorry, I'm yeah. still.
This is a new filing as of tonight.
Okay, so I move that we confirm General Ordinance Number 4, 2019, as amended.
Second.
It's been Moved by Councilperson Nation and seconded by Councilperson Aller that we approve General Ordinance 4-2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ordinance passes.
Thank you to the Animal Control Commission.
Thanks to all the folks interested in this ordinance who've come out several times, and we appreciate it.
Stay tuned for chickens.
Next item of business.
General Ordinance 5-2019, amending City Code, Chapter 2, Article 6, Section 2-68 through 2-68, establishing the Terre Haute Arts Commission certification of the 41/40 Terre Haute Arts Cultural District. And I need to apologize. It is 2-68 through, I don't know why, it's just 269.
Thank you. Okay. Petitioner.
Hi, I'm Jen Perry, and I'm representing the arts community. I'm the Region 6 Arts Commissioner for the Indiana Arts Commission, and I would like to petition for the General Ordinance Number 5, which is the formation of a City Arts Commission, as well as the formal acknowledgement of the 4140 Arts and Culture District boundaries. The modification of the boundaries will make them align with what the state has approved for Arts and Culture District, so it's a slight modification. It also takes it out of resolution and moves it into an ordinance. I'm here to answer any questions you might have.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak on General Ordinance 5-2019?
Donald Hyde, 1411 Poplar Street. I'll be real quick. I support the Arts Council. Anything this city can do to improve the look and the imprint of Terre Haute is a good thing.
Thank you.
I'm all for it. Thank you.
Any other member of the public who would like to speak on General Ordinance 5? Council.
Jen,
yep.
This is kind of a ridiculous question, but is it the 4140 Arts and Cultural District or Arts and Culture District?
Arts and Cultural.
Cultural.
I just shortened it.
And the 4140, the way that this is written, it's 41 space line space 40. There are not those spaces. And is that right, the way
yeah.
that we've got it?
Mm-hmm. With the spaces okay. on either side of the line, yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. All right, I just want to make sure that
no, thank
we're
you.
Passing something that has the right language in it, since people will look at it to find out what the real name is and how to write it. Thanks, yep. I yield.
Councilperson Azar.
Yeah, on this, where the mayor appoints five, or is that correct? Yeah, five, and the uh-huh. council appoints four. How are we going to, names? How do we get names?
Yeah,
people are just going to come and apply and say we'd like to be on that commission, or are you going to?
We can provide names to you, but if you have someone in your
no,
district,
no, I just want to know how it's going to happen.
Yeah, we'll help you come up with folks that are interested and engaged,
yeah.
and there are specific skill sets, of course, that we want to have represented because we want them to be able to be fiscal agents eventually.
Okay, thank you. I yield.
Councilwoman Aller.
If there's no further discussion, I move that we vote to vote on General Ordinance 5-2019.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Aller, seconded by Councilperson Morris, that we vote to vote on General Ordinance 5-2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Madam President.
Councilperson Aller.
I move that we approve General Ordinance 5-2019 as presented.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Aller, seconded by Councilperson Morris, that we approve General Ordinance 5-2019 as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much. Next order of business.
Resolution 4-2019, authorizing a temporary loan from the Terre Haute Sanitary District Operating Fund to the Terre Haute Sanitary District Bond Fund.
Madam President and members of the Council, I'm Leslie Ellis, the City Controller. I'm going to be brief tonight, although I could talk about this for a long time if you like. I've got lots of interesting details, but I'll keep it brief. Resolution number 4 is the same thing that we did last year. It is to authorize a temporary loan within the Sanitary District from the Operating Fund into the Bond Fund. And the reasoning for that is has to do with the property tax, the circuit breaker credits, how much we've lost in the property tax for our GEO bonds. This is a normal course of business from now on because of the property tax caps. We'll be bringing this to you every year, and this will just ensure that we receive the maximum levy for the sanitary district for our bond payments. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Anyone from the public who wishes to speak on Resolution 4, 2019? Council.
We can just move to approve resolutions, correct?
Right.
Okay, I move that we approve Resolution 4, 2019.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Azar, seconded by Councilperson Elliott, that we approve Resolution 4, 2019. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The resolution is approved.
Thank you.
Next item of business.
Okay, we are ready for the CF1 tax abatement forms. As a reminder, the motions are in substantial compliance or not in substantial compliance. The first one is for Chrysler Properties. There is a note at the bottom of the form that the Harrison Township Assessor said that the taxes will be assessed later in 2019 for payable in 2020. They did complete the form. They have one additional employee than they originally estimated.
Any questions from anyone, Council?
Well, Mr. President,
yes.
I move that, that what? This is in compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Morris and seconded by Councilperson, I believe, Aller, or Harrison, excuse me, that Form CF1 from Chrysler Properties, I guess it's Resolution 18, is that correct?
Yeah.
2017 be found in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It is in substantial compliance. Next item of business.
NMP CF1 form for Resolution 21-2014. This is a real property abatement. It appears they have 11 additional employees than originally estimated, mm-hmm. and they have completed all of their the information for cost and assessed value.
Any questions from council? Comments?
Madam President?
Yes, Councilman.
If there are no questions, I move that we find Resolution 21-2014 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation, seconded by Councilperson Haller, that we find Resolution 21-2014 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So found. Next item of business.
Holman & Company CF1 form, Resolution 25-2009. They have currently have 200 employees, and they originally estimated they would retain 141 plus three additional. So that is 56 additional employees they currently have. That print is very light.
And their salaries are substantially higher, too. Yes. Madam President?
Yes.
If there's no further discussion, I move that we find Resolution 25-2009 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation, seconded by Councilperson Garrison, that we find Resolution 25-2019 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It is so found. Next item of business.
This is Clapper Grill Resolution 26-2009. I'm not sure if you're having any issues with the light print or if it's just me.
It's a small print.
Yeah, it's very small. So we're going to use a light. They originally estimated they would have a total of 144 employees, and they currently have 200. And, again, the salaries are quite increased over. This was for a personal property abatement.
Madam President.
Councilperson Devon.
I move that we find Resolution 26-2009 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Devon, seconded by Councilperson Garrison, that we find Resolution 26-2009 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So found. Next item of business, please.
Club of Girl, CF1 Form Resolution 14-2006. They originally estimated a total of 139 employees, and they're showing 200. Again, a substantial increase in salaries as well.
Madam President.
Yes.
I move that we find Resolution 14-2006 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson Morris, that we find Resolution 14-2006 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It is so found. Next item of business.
Is Terre Haute TV CF1 Form Resolution 8-2011. This is their personal property for number 8. They originally estimated they would have a total of 77 employees, and they currently have 83. There is a companion tax abatement that you'll be looking at next for their personal, I'm sorry, their real property abatement.
Madam President.
Yes.
I move that we find Resolution 8-2011 in substantial compliance.
Second.
Been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson Holler, that we find Resolution 8-2011 in substantial compliance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's found in compliance. Next item of business.
Terre Haute TV CF1 Form Resolution 9-2011. Again, this is the real property abatement that is companion to the previous one. They originally estimated 77 employees. They currently have 83.
Madam President.
Yes.
I move that we find Resolution 9-2011 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson Nation, that we find Resolution 9-2011 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It is in compliance. Next item of business.
This is Welltower CF1 Form for Resolution 22-2012. They originally estimated they were going to hire a maximum of 100 new employees. They currently are showing 196 currently. This was a brand new project, and they had no employees to retain.
Michelle, the Madam President.
Yes.
The document that I have in front of me doesn't have any of those numbers on it.
No.
Okay, so if you look in Section 3, under as estimated on SP1, they actually left it blank except for the last two lines.
Oh, okay, yep.
Gotcha.
And then current, they did kind of make a typo. Current number of employees should be 196. Number of employees retained is 0 because they didn't have any employees to begin with. This was a brand new business.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So they currently have 196 employees.
Yes.
Okay. And they currently have a payroll of 3 million plus there.
Almost 4.
Mm-hmm. And they have no assessed value.
Yes, I apologize. They did not fill out their assessed value.
So should we have them address this? I mean, they're out of compliance.
Is the city attorney sitting in here? Good, then I'll answer. my answer is quite a few, not a significant amount, but quite a few companies do forget to fill out the assessed value. If you would like to, you could find them not in substantial compliance, and then we would set them for a hearing.
Well, I don't know if we want to go there. I mean, Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to point out that on page 2, which it says at the top it's the initial SB1, they did put they did right. fill it out, and the numbers on the left side are the same. Oh, no. Yeah, at the top of section 4, top left, the $11,900,000. No, $11,900.
So if you look under section 4, as estimated on SB1, so they do match those numbers, and then they have actual costs. Now, we can't say those numbers out loud because that information is confidential, the actual cost of the project, but they did put the value of the proposed project under cost for actual, which is $211,000 more than they originally estimated.
So my observation is that they appear to be in compliance, but they didn't fill out the paperwork correctly. Michelle, when they mess up the paperwork, what do you do? If we were to find this in substantial compliance, could you just send them a letter with the next form? Or?
What I can do is next year add more language. I had one individual call me this year, and I think Dawn was standing there with me, and she said it doesn't explain in the form to bring in your SB1, and it does in the letter say to bring in the SB1, so I can add more language to the letters we mail out every year.
I mean, they receive their property tax bill that tells them what the assessed value is. That's it's mailed to them every year. So, I mean, it shouldn't be that hard to, oh, I got that, plug that in.
Can we delay it a month and have them finish that out?
You could. Michelle, is there an opportunity to reach back to them before we act on this and say, hey, this appears to be not complete?
I think to be within timelines, don't we have to take action tonight? And if it's not in compliance, then we'd schedule a hearing.
Now it's going
to
want the city attorney back.
I don't know that you can table review. I mean, I guess you could. You could table the review. We have 45 days from the date of filing, and the original filing was made.
Can we just read that?
Second.
It was made when?
Second. See the file stamp at the top?
So we've got time for table it and then bring it back next month.
So you could table it and have it at the first June meeting.
Right.
Michelle?
Yes?
Oh, Madam President, sorry.
That's all right.
It's been a long
night. It's a
long
night.
Michelle, if we know the assessed value, can we read it into record so everybody here knows what it is?
Amy found it online.
Per Beacon.
If the city attorney was here, he'd probably
he's
come.
He's out in the hallway.
Yeah, that's not getting.
I mean, I can just say it on record, and then if somebody still wants to find it.
I wouldn't amend the form, but if
no, but
to
I
say.
Mean, that way we kind of know. I just looked up on Beacon, and as of 1/1/19, the assessment was $6,190,700. As of 1/1/18, it was
$5,992,500. And on the SB1, they originally estimated it would be, is that 9.5? Or 8.5.
Madam Chairman, President.
Yes.
The problem I see, and I'm sure they're in substantial compliance. The only problem I see is if you allow this to go through without those being filled out,
right.
Then you're going to start getting forms from everybody. And, well, they didn't fill them out. Let's, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if we shouldn't just find it not in substantial compliance, let them fill it out, and then in the next meeting we'll
form
out. Find it substantial.
You will have to set a hearing if you do not in substantial compliance.
But we've got 45 days.
And
if we tabled
it,
we've got 45 days, and you can send them the letter and say, hey, you haven't filled this out properly.
They filed it May 2nd, so you have 45 days from that date to take action on the form.
So let's table it she sends them a letter, they have to correct it, and then
we can table it. We just have to find it not in.
No,
we can table it.
We can table.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
I'll move to table.
Yeah.
Till when? Till when?
Till first meeting.
Yeah, don't go to the second.
Yeah, yeah. First meeting. Good job.
It's been moved by Councilperson Morris and seconded by Councilperson DeBon that RS 22-2012 be tabled until our first meeting in June. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Who said government? I'm the most favorite motion of all. I move to adjourn.
Second. Second, and that we adjourned. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
On your way out the door.